So what we are going to discuss today is combating water stress through nature-based solution. And we will try to explore more and more about water, because water stress is a global phenomena. Every country is facing it. And till date, we don't have a solution which is sustainable. So we have to focus on sustainability. And the best way to achieve sustainability is to align our strategies, align our policies with nature. So the more we align with nature, the more sustainable will be the life all across the planet, all across the countries. So the agenda will be like this. I mean, this presentation is already shared in the group, so everybody has it. This will be the flow of the presentation. We will understand about water first, then some of the latest scientific discoveries, speciality of the water body, importance of water in achieving a good, robust economy, role of governing body. That will be more governing body's role will be more Bharat-centric, because all examples will be based on Bharat. Then we have the market size in Bharat, India, and the socio-economic political aspect of water, impact of wrong water conservation approaches, impact of wrong approach for environmental restoration, nature-based solution, and then we will have a Q&A session. So that will be the flow of presentation. So understanding water is the first that we need to focus upon. Because if we have to solve a problem pertaining to a particular subject, we must understand the subject very well. So everybody, I mean, all across the globe, what we are trying to do is treat water without even understanding what exactly is water. So this is very, very important that we understand water in a holistic way, so that we are able to develop a strategy to de-stress the water stress that we have across the globe. So first and foremost, coming from the outer space, any space agency, when they are doing any kind of space exploration of the planets, of the moons, satellites, any kind of extraterrestrial celestial object, we are just trying to understand whether there is any possibility of water or not. Because if water is there, then only life is possible. Something which is applicable to all the celestial objects, obviously it is applicable to our own home planet as well. So water is the key cause of life on our planet, right? If it is just another chemical molecule that we understand as H2O, then why is it so essential for life? How can it be a cause of life, right? So one thing is very clear, it is definitely something beyond two atoms of hydrogen and single atom of oxygen, right? What exactly is beyond H2O is what we intend to understand in today's discussion, right? So if you look at the formation of H2O, hydrogen is combustible, oxygen is combustible. Hydrogen is one of the cleanest and the greenest fuel on the planet. Without oxygen, no combustion is possible. So both hydrogen and oxygen are inflammable. Then how come H2O or water is the extinguisher of fire? The entire property is changed. The core elements are inflammable, and the compound is an extinguisher of fire. Secondly, if we look at any substance on the planet, whether it is iron or gold or silver or even wood, anything that we see across the planet as a as an object, the moment you freeze it, it will contract. The condensation process will contract the object. Water is the only substance, so to say, if you call it a substance, that is the only substance which will expand when frozen. So this is against the laws of physics that we see across the planet. Ice is always lighter than water. That is why ice floats on water. Right? Now, again, a big irony is 73% of the planet is water. So it is the most abundant, if you call it a substance, it is the most abundant substance on the planet. And still, only 1% of water is usable by the terrestrial beings, right? So that's again another irony. Now, again, one more important aspect to understand is without water within soil, without the soil moisture, not even a single seed can germinate. The seeds germinate in soil only when there is soil moisture present. No terrestrial organism can breathe air if the humidity in air is zero. So between soil, water and air also, the most common feature or the most common object is water. Without water, nothing is possible. So that is why it is very, very important for everyone to understand the importance of water. The water is, now we have understood that water is way beyond H2O. It defies the principles of physics. It is most abundant and still it is rare, and it is present in all the possible media that we have on the planet. So obviously when we are dealing with water, we are dealing with a completely different phenomena than a mere substance called H2O. Okay?
Yes.
Now, coming from the science perspective, what we need to understand is, as I said, condensation contracts, but this is working against the principle. It is expanding, right? It is present on the planet in solid, liquid and gas, all three forms. You cannot destroy water come what may. You cannot burn water. You can boil water, it will evaporate, it will change its form, it will be there in the gaseous form as water vapor. You condense it, it becomes solid, right? So all three forms, it exists. There is no other thing that exists in all three different forms, right? It has got a force of its own, which is buoyant force, because of which the ship sail in water, right? Water has got a unique way of movement. We see that the water is flowing straight, but it is at a molecular level, it is moving spiral. Right? It is moving in a spiral fashion, even into a river. And that is why when we get a kind of depression in the river channel, it creates a whirlpool. Because this movement, the moment it goes vertical, it creates a whirlpool. And whirlpool again will have a centrifugal force. So buoyant force will push everything out of water, whereas centrifugal force will attract everything into the water in a whirlpool, right? So, there are a lot of unique properties. Now, again, water responds to the stimulus and it interacts with the environment. There is a wonderful project, if you go on to Google and you search for Dr. Marasu Emoto in Japan, he has done wonderful experiments with water, by keeping a water in a slaughterhouse and keeping a bowl of water from the same source in a monastery, and creating water crystal out of it. Right? So that actually gives you a complete indication of how water responds to the stimulus of the environment around. Then memory of water is again a great subject on which Dr. Luc Montier has worked from France, who has been a Nobel laureate. He was the person who discovered the HIV virus, for which he got the Nobel Prize. Before that, there was Dr. Jacques Benveniste, again from France, who had done a lot of research on water memory. All these names that I am taking are all available on Google. You can just go and search for them in Google, and you can study about their work, right? So Dr. Luc Montier actually performed the entire experiment in front of camera, and this entire experiment is there on YouTube. You can simply go and search for Dr. Luc Montier. So what he has done is, he has taken a test tube of fresh water, added a virus, HIV virus infected gene strand into it, then took one drop of water from this and added to another test tube, then again one water from that test tube to another test tube. So it was diluted 24 times. Now the 24th dilution is as equal to as one drop in an ocean. Now this test tube was put inside a recording device from where the radiations from this particular test tube was recorded as wave files. And this entire experiment is happening in France, in Paris. And this wave file was emailed to another group of scientists who were sitting in Milan. And they downloaded the file. They put a fresh test tube of fresh water from a local tap in Milan. And they made this test tube listen to this wave file, which was downloaded from the internet. And they tried to recreate the HIV infected DNA strand, and they were able to recreate it. So this means water doesn't just have a memory, it can listen, it can record, it can communicate, and it can memorize, and it can even translate, right? So water is definitely way beyond H2O. Water is the key source of life. By that virtue, it cannot be a dead substance. It is a living ecosystem. So this is the moment we understand that water is a living ecosystem, the entire thought process of the approach will change. Because anything with living has basic properties. Property number one is, somebody saying something? So property number one is, there will be a basic intelligence which every living ecosystem has, every living being has. So there is a basic intelligence. And second, there is a self-healing mechanism. So all that water stress that we are dealing with, the moment we start understanding and respecting these two features, the problems will get sorted in a more holistic and sustainable way, right? So let us now understand what are water bodies. Water bodies are conjunction point of soil, water and air, right? All these three elements are essential for life. Without soil, no plant can grow. Without water, no plant can grow. Without air, no plant can breathe, right? Animals are herbivores, animals are carnivores or animals are omnivores. But ultimately, if you look at human beings, every child is born at 2 kgs to 3.5 kgs. And every human being that dies at the age of 50, 60, 70, he is 50, 60, 70 kgs. So how did this 2.5 or 3 kgs got transformed into 70 kgs? It is the basic input that we have taken from this planet, living on this planet. And the key resource for that is soil, water, and whether we are eating plants or whether we are eating non-vegetarian food, ultimately non-vegetarian food is also consuming plants, and plants are consuming soil, water, and air. So the water body is the conjunction point of soil, water, and air. That is why there is a consistent exchange between the three layers, between soil and water, between water and air, and this exchange actually results into ecosystem services being provided by the water bodies. As long as we are trying to clean the water bodies, the problem will not be sorted, the problem will not be solved. Cleaning of water is a natural phenomena if the water body is in healthy conditions. So we need to focus to restore the health of the water bodies so that the ecosystem services from the water bodies in the wetlands are restored. That is the right approach to solve the water stress across the globe. Now, if you look at the economy, water itself has got a huge kingdom in which the economy is depending on water. Whether you do agriculture or you do animal farm or you do poultry or you do piggery or dairy or you set up any industry, no industry can run without water. Or if you talk about biodiversity conservation or we talk about water journalism or legal aspect of water or academic research in water, the entire kingdom has got water in the core. Without water, there is no possible development, no possible economy. There is no economical venture that can run without water. So water is the key aspect of development anywhere across the globe. Without water, it will turn into desert. Without water, there will be no economy possible. So, if again, as I said in the beginning, the governing bodies is, I'm going to explain only about how it happens in India, in Bharat. Here, what we do is, water bodies are owned by the government, right? There could be places where water bodies are owned by the community. There could be places where the water bodies are owned by the army, right? So, different countries, there could be different models. What we are discussing in terms of the governing bodies is specific to Bharat, specific to India. Before this slide, whatever I was talking about, it was all universal. All across the globe, it was applicable. But when we talk about a governing body system, the system is a man-made system. It is not the law of nature, right? So into the man-made system, we have to be specific to a particular society, to a particular country. So this is how it happens in India. In India, the water bodies are owned by either the local, urban local bodies or the administration or the township or the campus owner, right? So that means it could be quasi-government, it could be pure government, or it could be a corporation who will own the natural resources. In urban local bodies, we have municipal corporations, smart cities, development authorities, or different kinds of boards are there. Into administration, we have district magistrate, we have chief development officer or block development officer or some other nodal agency or a cooperative. In township, we can, it can be a cantonment board, railway board, port authority, or any academic campus or a public sector undertaking which has got a campus. Like in India, we have various public sector undertakings like Steel Authority of India, or we have Gas Authority of India, or we have Oil and Natural Gas Corporation, Indian Oil Corporation. All of them have got huge campuses, and within the campuses they have water bodies. They are, that's a complete township on its own, where you have schools and you have hospital, you have residential places, you have commercial places, you have water bodies, you have roads, you have electricity supply. The entire kind of infrastructure is owned by the public sector undertaking. Now, again, this the market space or the opportunity size or the amount of business happening into the water sector is, again, it has to be specific to a particular geography. So here again, we are talking about Bharat. In 2019, for the first time, there was a Jal Shakti Mantralay created in the history of the country. Why it was needed was because at that point in time, the country had, the 54% of the country was under acute water stress. The underground aquifer had already depleted, as per the estimate, about 22%, because we were doing an over extraction through bore wells, and the underfilling was happening, where a recharge was not happening, and that is why there was an acute water stress. So the central government, as you all might be knowing, India has got a federal structure. There are states and then there is a central government. So the central government realized that we are getting under acute water stress, and that is why can you please put your microphone on mute? Yeah. So the central government has started focusing towards restoration of water. There are lots and lots of schemes which are coming in. Government is pumping in money like anything to restore the water balance, to reclaim the water abundance, and restore the water condition across the country. So a lot has been done, but there is still a lot to do. So if we actually look at the requirement of water, it has got social impact, it has got economic impact, and it has got political impact, right? These are the three basic founding structures of the society. Everybody, all human beings need water, air, and food, right? The entire economics revolves around the livelihood of the people, or the employment opportunities. Everything is dependent on water. Without water, no economic organization can generate economy, can generate revenue, right? Because ultimately it will be people who will be working there, and people need water to drink. All your industrial processes need water. There is not even a single industry on this planet which does not waste water, right? And for politics, you need to ensure that the people get soil, water, and air. People get water to drink, food to eat, and air to breathe. So, under all circumstances, whether it is socio-economic or political, nothing is possible without water. So, water is of key importance, irrespective of the geography, irrespective of the country that you live in, irrespective of the geographical region that you belong to. Whether you're there in Siberia or you're there in Liberia, whether you are in Australia or you are there in Greenland, everywhere, wherever human beings are there, wherever any kind of terrestrial life is there, water is very, very important. Now, coming back to Africa as focus, I'm sure most of you would not be recognizing this man. He is Mr. Alan Savary, who is technically a naturalist. He's an American grassland ecosystem pioneer. And he was posted in Africa in 1950s. And this is his TED talk, wherein he's saying that in 1950s, as a young biologist in Africa, he did a research to prove that too many elephants in the African jungles were causing desertification. And in following years, all the governments were convinced, and he got 40,000 elephants killed. But killing of elephants actually further worsened the desertification. So this is what happens when you have a wrong approach towards solving a problem, right? We all know we are undergoing huge water stress, right? It was during this major elephant killing spree that Botswana in Africa actually became world's largest elephant sanctuary, because that was the only country which decided that, okay, you don't kill elephants, you give it to us. We will take care of them. And if you're aware, in June, July 2020, one of the biggest ecological disasters happened in Botswana. Over 300 elephants were, you can call them, died, and nobody knew why did they die. Finally, all the ecologists, all the environmentalists from all across the globe flew for conducting a study on why were 300 odd elephants dying in Botswana during summer of 2020. That was the peak of pandemic time also. Almost all the countries were under lockdown, right? So what did they find? They find that during peak of summers, when the temperature was very, very high, elephants were taking a refuge into the shallow water ponds. And in these ponds, there was a specific type of a cyanobacteria which created neurotoxins, which entered into the nervous system of these elephants through their skin. And after they were out of the pool, the neurotoxin which had entered into their body paralyzed the elephants, and they died wherever they were, in paralysis, in lack of food, in lack of water, because they were unable to move, right? So we must understand a subject. We have spent enough time to understand water. Now let us understand what goes wrong in water body restoration. This is the wrong way which almost all the countries, all the governments are taking as an approach. If you have to restore a water body, you will create a sewage treatment plant, or you install rainwater harvesting apparatus, or you do water body desilting or deweeding, or you do a plantation drive, right? Now let us understand these aspects in a bit further detail. Sewage treatment plants can only treat the fresh incoming water. What happens to the existing water into the water body, which is already contaminated with the nutrient overload? The sewage treatment plant definitely is not the solution. Into rainwater harvesting, the approach that we are taking, this is the physical approach of putting in a straw into the earth crust and filling in the water through the straw. That's obviously not natural, not normal, because first and foremost, we have to come out of this idea that human beings are superior beings and we will tell nature how to behave and how to perform, right? there is a natural ecosystem that existed before human beings came onto this planet. We don't need human beings to teach plants how to grow. We don't need human beings to tell animals how to grow. All these are natural phenomena, and human intelligence is definitely respectable. It has been given to human beings by nature only. Human beings are just another manifestation of the nature. So we are having a symbiotic relationship with all the plants and animals that we have all around. So the right way is to respect this symbiotic relationship. Instead of keeping human beings on the top of the food chain and consuming everything all across that we see, that's a wrong approach. I would say that is more of a Western approach than an African or an Indian approach, because both Africa and India has been living in absolute harmony with nature for ages, right? So what we need to understand is we need to go back to our roots, understand our traditions, understand them with the scientific bent of mind. Whatever was being done in Africa traditionally, whatever was being done in India traditionally, in Bharat traditionally, all that was 100% science. During this colonial rule, the Western powers have made us believe that they were required to civilize us. Actually, we have been more civilized than them ever since. So what we need to understand is get into the scientific base of our traditions, of our cultural ethos, and we will be able to solve this entire problem. So the sewage treatment plant is just about 100-year-old approach. Before that, how was water taking care of itself? That was a natural phenomena, right? Today, World Bank is pumping in money, International Monetary Fund is pumping in money, France is donating money, Russia is donating money for what? For water, sanitation and hygiene. And what do they do in that? They create sewage treatment plants, right? So why has water gone bad? We all understand not even a single drop of water has moved out of the planet. Water, what was there, is there and will be there. Because as I explained, you cannot destroy water. If you heat it up, it will evaporate. It will become vapor. It will change its form. But it is still there in the same planet. If you freeze it down, it will become ice. It will solidify. It will change its form. But it will still remain in the same planet. So, you cannot destroy water come what may. Then why on earth do we have this water stress? It is only because we human beings, with our anthropogenic activities of our blind follow-up of West, leaving our own culture and tradition, we have changed our lifestyles. And our lifestyle is such today that every human being on this planet is generating 144 liters of sewage every day, wherever you have absolutely free access to water. Multiply it by 7 billion people and you understand the kind of sewage that we are generating on a daily basis. And where is this sewage going? It is going into the natural water resource. It is going into a lake, into a pond, into a river. So we are the people who are polluting, who are contaminating our natural water resource. And then we want to intervene into the natural system with our own whims and fancies without even understanding what water is. And that is why we take this stupid approach of desilting water. On the right hand side of your screen, you can see a real project in the state of Haryana of Bharat, wherein before the restoration, The water body was filled with water, and after the restoration approach, there is no single drop of water. So what have they restored? They have restored only the body, not the water body. And that is how you create a water stress. The most valuable resource, by pumping it out and spending into beautification. So fortunately, after formation of Jal Shakti Mantralaya, all these malpractices have stopped. Now people have started actually talking about water body rejuvenation instead of water body reclamation. Right? So what's the right way? The right way is to understand that every water body, every landlocked water body, I'm not talking about oceans. Oceans have got their own importance. But landlocked water bodies are specifically created for terrestrial life forms. We all know that water, the life began in water, but that was marine water, that was the oceanic water. So oceanic ecosystem, oceanic biodiversity needs saline water, and they're happy with it. So salinity doesn't matter to them. But life moved from water towards terrestrial in form of amphibia, and then there was a solid structure created, which we call as the land surface or the terrestrial surface today, wherein we have the entirely different biodiversity of plants, animals, birds, insects, and these are all needing sweet water, not the saline water, right? So all the landlocked water bodies have got a lot of ecosystem services to provide, and the objective or the focus of our water body restoration project should be on restoration of these ecosystem services from the water body, not cleaning of the water. Because the moment we restore these ecosystem services from the water bodies, cleaning is a natural byproduct which will happen naturally in every water body. So what are these services? We divided into three categories for the sake of easier understanding. First kind of service is mitigation, second is conservation, third is maintenance, right? Now most of the people would not be able to relate to it, because the first point in mitigation service is air pollution. Now, how does water body perform air pollution, right? So, for just a hypothetical scenario, if you remove all the human beings from the face of the planet, will the water bodies get polluted or not? The answer is yes. Just by the natural phenomena, water body will get contaminated. And nature also has a solution of decontamination. So it's all natural process. So let's say if there is a volcanic eruption, all the fumes of heavy metals and minerals will be pushed into the air, from where it will settle down onto the water body surface, and it will add heavy metals and minerals to the water body. Something very similar to what we do with our industrial effluent, right? What we call as air pollution is largely the particulate matter, whether it is PM5, PM2.5 or PM10. Now, what is this particulate matter? Particulate matter is basically freely floating, positively charged particles, which are very small particles. Why are they floating freely? Only because they have a positive charge and they are waiting for a surface to land. If the water bodies are contaminated, then they don't get a surface to land, and that is why they are dispersed into the air. And when we breathe, it gets into our lungs and create a respiratory disorder. Any water body in a healthy condition has got a top surface which is negatively charged. So it will naturally attract the positively charged particulate matter. So particulate matter will be removed from the air, and the air pollution mitigation will happen naturally. Secondly, every water body is a blue carbon sink, because there is an aquatic food chain. There are single-celled organisms in the bottom of the food chain, and they are largely autotrophic. They can do sulfur synthesis, methane synthesis. They can do photosynthesis. So all the photosynthetic single-celled organism into the water body need two inputs from outside of the water body. One is carbon that they absorb from the greenhouse gases which are there in the atmosphere. And second is the photon, which comes from the sunlight. So you synthesize this and you prepare food for yourself as a single-celled organism. Now, in this process, the exchange with the air is carbon sequestration. Every natural water body in itself is a carbon sink, for which the entire world is discussing in every COP summit, that how do we reduce carbon, right? They are still thinking about reducing carbon. If we make all our water bodies healthy, we will be removing carbon, not reducing carbon, right? So this is the second kind of exchange that happens between air and water. Now, the third kind of exchange is, as I said, single-celled organisms are doing photosynthesis, which is the cause of dissolved oxygen within water. But when the production is beyond the holding capacity of water, it is emitted in the air. So you sit next to a natural water body for half an hour, for 1 hour, and you'll feel rejuvenated. Why do you feel rejuvenated? Only because around a naturally healthy water body, you get more oxygenated air. And 80% of the oxygen that we breathe is consumed by our brain. We get tired by our brain, we get rejuvenated by our brain. So when the brain is tired, the oxygen supply to the brain is compromised. So when you sit next to a water body in which the air is having abundance of oxygen, you get that extra oxygen for your brain and you feel rejuvenated. So these are the three kind of exchanges which happen in air the exchange between water and air, and that is how you get air pollution mitigation done. So this slide in itself can take a lot of time to explain. So let us stick to this aspect of it, that we should be working on a nature-based solution. Then only we can solve these problems sustainably and holistically. And our focus should not be to clean water, but it should be to restore the ecosystem services from the water bodies and the wetlands. Then only we can stop the process of shrinking of lake charge. We can stop the process of this kind of ecological mishap that we have in Botswana in 2020. And we can actually restore the water abundance. See, Africa as a continent was not short of water. We can restore that abundance provided we change our lifestyle and we take the right approach towards restoring our water bodies. So that would be the end of the presentation. If you have any queries, if you have any questions, you can ask on WhatsApp, or you can simply unmute yourself and you can ask your question. If anybody has got any questions, you can just ask your questions. Or you can ask your questions onto WhatsApp as well. Or what you can also do is you can just make a list of your questions.
Hello. Thank you so much, Mr. Muhaka, for the splendid presentation, we are absolutely moved from the presentation. It was actually well organized and well delivered, and he has been splendid on this presentation. So, however, for our audience, if you have any question from the presentation that just been presented, you can turn all of your questions so that we can have the WhatsApp chat room being interactive. Probably if it is convenient for you to send your question within the WhatsApp chat room, or either you can ask your question within the Google Meet comments box. So if you have any question, you can put me in comment box, then our facilitator can be able to answer your question. So we are also encouraging you to ask more questions so we can have this presentation being more interactive and more educated, as we have learned a lot from the lecturer himself. So I want to say thank you. Once again, we are grateful for having you being here on this platform.
So thank you. Thanks a lot, everyone, for joining in. Thanks to YIL Network for having me here. And thanks for the wonderful, beautiful audience that we have. So if anybody has got any queries, you can just post it and I'll be happy to answer all your queries. In case if you want a further elaborated session, maybe we can have next session only on the ecosystem services from the water bodies and understanding the phenomena. But for this session, I guess a lot of time from everybody. Thanks a lot.
Just sign out. Okay, so we have one question, Mr. Mahaka. We have one question here from one of our participants from Buba Desan. He is from South Sudan. He is asking why it is so hard to invest in natural-based solution. Why is it so hard to invest in natural-based solution? His question is, why it is so hard to invest in?
It is not hard to invest into nature-based solution. It is just a conspiracy theory that nature-based solution is very expensive or it is hard to invest in. Right? We have been following the West blindly for last almost 100 years. And we are there in a soup called climate change, global warming. Whatever they have done is actually a destructive development. Whatever we were living, India and Africa, we were living a very sustainable life. That is why we've been the most continuous surviving civilization on the planet. Because we respected nature, we lived in absolute harmony with nature. So everything doesn't need money. It just needs the right knowledge in the right place. And we have all that. It is there in our basic DNA. Nature-based solution is not expensive. Nature-based solution is not hard to invest in. But yes, if you're looking at money from, let's say, a World Bank, or from International Monetary Fund, then obviously they will have their own restriction that, okay, I'm giving you the money. So wherever the money is coming in from, obviously that agency, that authority, that entity is going to govern how do you spend it as well. So they will be giving you the money and asking you to build a sewage treatment plant instead of adopting a nature-based solution. So that is a fight with the man-made ecosystem. That is not a fight with the nature, right? We have given presentation to World Bank to make them understand your approach is not sustainable. Your sewage treatment plant is completely dependent on energy, on pumps, on mechanical devices. So there are multiple points of failures. Nothing is more sustainable than the nature itself. So if you have to devise a development strategy that has to be in absolute harmony with nature, then only it will be sustainable, then only it will be holistic. right? Nature doesn't have a concept of waste or wealth. Both these concepts are man-made. We attach value to something and we call it wealth. We detach that value and we call it a waste. Now, living blindly the Western way, we are creating garbage dump yards everywhere. There is not even a single city which does not have a garbage dump yard. Right? So that's the most unsustainable way of living. So it's not hard to invest in. And there is another question, how can we apply a nature-based solution to handle or improve the water management in the rural community? Okay. In the rural communities, all the wastewater comes into the rural water bodies. There we need to do an intervention and we need to restore the natural abundance into the water bodies. You don't need to put in fishes or turtles. They will come on their own. You just need to focus on the right conducive environment for, as I told you, two basic components there for fresh and healthy water bodies. One is the aquatic food chain. So if you have a 10-acre water body and you have, let's say, 10 KLD of sewage coming in, you don't have to worry about it because the water body is self-sustainable. It can consume and digest whatever wastewater is coming in. But if the water body is, let's say, 1 acre and you're putting in the sewage of 10 million liters per day, then obviously the system will collapse, right? So we need to calibrate all this. You can visit our website. It is www.vaidicsrijan.com, VaidicsRijan.com. And you can understand about the technology that we have developed. But I'm encouraging all of you to actually go back to your roots. Our own traditional system, our own cultural ethos has got solution for it. And for that matter, entire Africa and India have been a very enriched civilization on this planet. All through last more than about 3,000, 4,000 years. The moment we stop looking at our own roots with respect, the moment we are cut off from our roots and we blindly follow the West, all these problems will start cropping up. So we can find out all our problems solution within our tradition, within our culture. That will always be a nature-based solution. We always had a nature-based solution for all the problems. Even today, all these problems which have probably never happened into the recorded history of global warming, climate change, antimicrobial resistance, all these are modern day problems. But still, I'm telling you, I'm guaranteeing you that in our roots, in our tradition, we have solution for everything. We have invented this technology, which we call as cownomics technology, which is a nature-based solution. And we are transforming sewage pools into fresh water bodies. Maybe some other day we can do a session on this, wherein I can show you day-by-day improvement of the water bodies with our technology, right? But nature-based solution is the way forward. That is the future. So that, I mean, for all probable reasons, you can call it back to future, because the sustainable future has got its roots in our past, in our culture, in our tradition. Okay. We can apply nature-based solutions. The next question is from Kinte Boy. I was having a network problem, but I heard you talking about the elephant. My question is, what connection did elephants have with the water bodies? Okay, elephants were spending more time into the water bodies, and the water bodies were infected with a specific kind of a cyanobacteria, which was generating neurotoxins. And those neurotoxins actually entered into the elephant's body through the skin because they were spending a lot of time into the water body. So these shallow water bodies, just because the water quality was not good and the cyanobacteria was there, which was generating a neurotoxin, it resulted into the death of the elephants. Okay. Next is name Adot Akat Bulo from South Sudan. Humanitarian request. I am requesting the facility to slide. All the slides have already been shared in the group. You can just download it from there. Based on your research, sir, the most water especially Africa. See, I have not done a dedicated study on Africa from the water perspective or water stress perspective. But
as I say, Rajiv Ba, Meron.
You need to mute yourself, Mr. Aher Zabir Yel. Yeah, thank you, sir. Okay, from the Africa perspective, I have not done any extensive research on which country has got more amount of water stress, but overall, Africa as a continent is undergoing an acute water stress because the extraction is way too high compared to recharge, right? And the lifestyles have changed. We know in South Africa, we recently have had a 0 day in Cape Town. There is a rationing on water, right? Lake Chad, which would have reduced by almost 60%